It's only by embracing your vulnerability that you can take risk and grow.
Welcome to your heavenly refuge, a space to unwind your mind, slow down your rhythm, and fill your whole body up with inspiration.
Dreaming with open eyes, being in another world. Don't know what's truth or lie, all these stories that you've heard. Having difficulties to speak, because they seem so far away. It is time to be awake, got important things to say.
This podcast will nourish you with the stories from beautiful creators and entrepreneurs who have already made a change in their life using their gifts to walk their talk. Welcome again. My name is Oyana Galor Dual, yoga teacher and nutrition consultant, enthusiastic about bringing the stories of people that share their unique blueprint with the world. I'm very thrilled about this episode in Ibiza Refuge for Dreamers. Because of the multidisciplinary background of my guests today, we are gonna be navigating into different venues, from film and documentary production to regenerative agriculture. My guest today is Giancarlo Canavesio. He is an entrepreneur and film producer. He is the founder of Managusta Productions and Mango TV, an online digital platform that produces and distributes films and helps bring wider ideas into the world. He has produced several award-winning films as Neurons to Nirvana, We to the People, and Monogamies. Giancarlo has been curating films and moderating roundtables on expansion of awareness for the community of Ibiza during the last years. At the moment, he is part of a project called Ibiza Land Regeneration, where he has teamed up with experts from the island to revitalize abandoned and underused agricultural land in Ibiza. Good morning, Giancarlo.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Congratulations for your new endeavor.
Looking at your biography, I have realized that you have become focused on radically different industries and topics during your different life cycles. I'd like you to explain what made you shift from banking to film production to regenerative agriculture.
Yes, so I moved to New York in late 90s for my previous work for the investment, and I went to New York to select hedge funds for European institutional clients. And then in New York, I was immediately exposed to interesting counterculture. I remember reading Daniel Pinchback's book, How to Open Your Mind, on contemporary shamanism, and I got immediately intrigued by that. And then simultaneously, I started dating my girlfriend, who's now my wife, who already had an ayahuasca practice. And so in 2006, she organized a ceremony for me at one of her friends' boathouse in the Seine in Paris. And so that was the first really episode that sparked my curiosity in the inner journey, in consciousness, in other energies that you don't see. And that was the beginning of a long journey of discovery. And and my wife and I, we had an ayahuasca practice for 6-7 years, from 06 to 2012. Where we went very deep, and with many retreats in the Amazons. And so that kind of spiritual and mystical exploration was not really going very well with the investment banking and finance. And so I did for a while, you know, my mystical studies on one side and the investment on the other, but I felt a little bit like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I felt a little bit incompatible. And also the traveling back to Europe. So I pretty much left finance in 2005, 2006, something like that, 2007. And and then I started with a friend to produce some, it was the first project was a short based on a story by Truman Capote, and we screened that in New York, and that was really exciting and exhilarating. And then I adapted the Daniel's second book, 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl. I adapted it as a documentary, and that was around the end of the Mayan calendar. So we started working on that in 2008. I can talk more about the documentary if you want, because it's very...
I see that you started getting into film industry, into documentaries, and I like looking at the topics you developed in the documentaries, all of them are around expansion of consciousness and alternative ways of looking at different subjects or themes a little bit outside of the normal in society. Mm-hmm. What made you have this approach?
I think definitely ayahuasca was a big help. And also, you know, we now know that not just ayahuasca with DMT, but you know, LSD and psilocybin and mescaline, all these family that are called tryptamines. We now know there is enough scientific evidence that, especially with the invention of functional magnetic resonance imagery, you know, the traditional MRI, mm-hmm. I think 20-30 years ago, they invented a functional MRI where you see in real time what's happening in the brain. And as Michael Michael Pollan explained on his book on how to break your head open or something like that, what's happening with when you take these tryptamines, they reduce the blood supply in three key areas of the brain: the prefrontal cortex, the thalamus, and the median cortex. And by reducing, and these three areas, they are hubs of different parts of the brain. What happens is when you take these tryptamines, they reduce the blood supply in those three key areas. Mm-hmm. These three key areas together, they create what the neuropsychopharmacologists call the default mode network, which is the closest thing to your egoic structure. So what happened, also Michael Pollan explained it well, imagine that the default mode network is the director of the orchestra of your brain, who decides now the violin, now the piano. What happened when you take this compound, it reduces the blood supply, the default mode network gets weakened. So it's like the director of orchestra goes to bed. He falls asleep. And so for the first time, you can transcend your cultural conditioning. So for the first time, you can experience reality without all the conditioning that comes from where you grew up and your environment, your family. So I think that, you know, my curiosity paired with this freed mind, if you want. You know, this practice really helped to be able to see things without the condition of your culture. You can then see things as, you know, like it's like a tabula rasa. It's like you have the opportunity to really reinvent yourself and see the world with new eyes. So the psychedelic practice really helped. And then, of course, my curiosity, being in New York and having access to these incredible filmmakers that brought all these ideas, like the end of the Mayan calendar, like the scientific research of psychedelics, like The Lottery of Bird, all these documentaries that you can see on Mango TV, they're all product of my curiosity, the open mind of the psychedelic, and then the incredible quality of filmmakers that you can encounter in New York.
So it sounds like the medicines brought you from the mind maybe to your heart, and then you looked for a platform to spread in this around the world.
Yes.
With maybe Mango TV.
Yes, that also can be. Yeah, the less you're on your mind, the less you can feel with the rest of your body, with your gut, with your heart, for sure. So I was definitely more drawn to maybe topic not so commercial. You know, once the ego is a little bit weakened and you it's easier to step out from the rat race, and it's easier to maybe do, embark in adventure that are not necessarily money-making, like esoteric documentary, for example. So for sure, the switch from the mind to the rest of the body has definitely been one one aspect of the shift, of my shift.
What made you cover topics like sex and love, like freedom and society, life and death?
So for the sex and love and relationship, basically my father was a typical Italian playboy. So he was practicing non-consensual, non-monogamy. He was basically cheating.
Okay.
And yeah, I remember once he make us dress with ski clothes and pack to go skiing, supposedly, just to make this one of his girlfriend believe that we were leaving for the mountains. So we pretend to leave, then we went around the block and went back home because another of his girlfriend was coming. I mean, I'm laughing now because it's funny, but back then I was 10 and I was very confused about this, you know, not just lying, but, you know, mounting and a full scene to trick this lady. And so I thought there was nothing, there was something wrong there. And then my friend from childhood, Tao Ruspoli, who was a filmmaker, also had a very playboy father.
Okay.
And so he also suffered from this education of you know, really lack of respect for woman, and so together we always said, you know, we should do a documentary on monogamy. And in the same time, in those years, there was already a movement called CNM, mm-hmm. which is consensual non-monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a movement where we say, okay, let's be honest with each other. We don't want to stay only with one person, or we don't want to have sex just with one person. There's different. CNM is the umbrella term. Mm-hmm. Then you have, you know, can be open, can be polyamorous, can be don't ask, don't tell, can be swinging, can be emotionally monogamous but sexually non-monogamous, can be also emotionally and sexually non-monogamous. There are a lot of different mm-hmm. of different formula. And so Tao, after his divorce, he went on the road interviewing experts like Esther Perel, Dan Savage, Christopher Ryan, who had wrote a book called Sex at Dawn, where he explained very clearly, he spent 20 years as an anthropologist studying all these different animal species, and the conclusion is that there is not one single animal in the animal world who's monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about the Napoleon penguin, mm-hmm. and, you know, remember that documentary March of the Penguin,
mm-hmm.
and religious congregation that would rent cinema to show how monogamous are the penguin, you know, to make sure that. But the reality is that those penguins, they were monogamous for one season.
Mm.
So, you know, it was quite beautiful for that summer or that season where they were so monogamous, but just one. Then the year after they would change.
Mm.
So they're not exactly monogamous. Then they talk about the swan. They mate for life, but they have sex as of the couple. There's no one single species.
Mm.
So what is it that you know? So monogamy is not natural, as this book has demonstrated. It's not working. 60% of marriage in America end up in divorce. And it's very recent. People don't know that, but reciprocal monogamy is like 60 years old. It started in the 60s with the movement of the woman right.
Mm.
In the history of humankind, men has never been monogamous.
Mm.
They imposed monogamy on the woman because they wanted to make sure that the baby was theirs, to protect the inheritance, etc.
Mm.
So in the 60s, instead of giving the woman the same freedom, they imposed the man the same restriction.
Mm.
And so from the 60s now, you know, it's pretty much taboo, even in the most open circle.
Mm-hmm.
When someone is openly polyamorous, people notice.
Yeah.
So we did this documentary, and we had an incredible success. We premiered it at the film festival in Rome,
mm-hmm.
where I thought that, you know, the Roman and in the town of the Pope, but it was like we had to put a second screening because there was so much demand. And one of the protagonists of the documentary came for the Q&A in Rome, and she was polyamorous, and all the Italian women were like so curious and intrigued.
Oh, sure.
So that was my first experience of exploration of a non-monogamy world. And that's a little bit the beginning of that interest. And then the other thing that I'm interested in now is Tantra.
Mm-hmm.
Is this idea that, you know, you can really sublimate and having this, you know, using sexual energy for transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Margot Anand, she's a beautiful Tantra teacher, and she says that awakening philosophy and religion of awakening, they never look below the waist. And they say, don't go there, it's dangerous. And Tantra is the only really religion brought from the Tao, from China, and from the Veda, from India. They both incorporate sexual energy into transcendence. And so that's interesting, you know, when you hear talking about cosmic orgasm, I mean, of course I'm interested. And then it's also a way maybe to have this, you know, long-term monogamous marriage, you know, to be with someone for 20, 30 years, you know, rather than maybe open up. I mean, everybody does whatever you want, but I'm just exploring the possibility that, you know, instead of maybe opening up and looking at this non-monogamous relationship, maybe looking at a tantra practice where you go deeper with one person rather than wider with more.
Yeah.
I'm interested on these two, you know, these two possibilities, because it's true that so many people have just take sexuality out of the marriage because someone has lost interest, and I feel that there is something very important in sexual energy, in creating vitality.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not fair that maybe a man has decided that he's not interested anymore, and then to have a sexless marriage, I think it's a bit of a pity.
Yeah.
So I think those are the two options that I see now, you know, maybe looking to open up or looking to do deeper in this man, you know, it's really a mind-body spirit exercise with the tantra. And then since we're talking about that, on the new website on Mango TV, there's going to be a movie which I didn't produce, which is called Estado Impuro.
Okay.
It's an Argentinian filmmaker who had a huge heartbreak as a kid. And he start exploring all the literature on non-monogamy. There's a philosopher from the 17th century called Jean Fourier, who is credited to be the first polyamorous, the first about talking about polyamorous already in the 17th century. And Arturo Prince is the filmmaker. He's done, it's a fiction, actually. It's the only movie which is not a documentary, where a couple of three basically invite two conservative couples into a crazy afternoon. And I'm not going to reveal too much, but I think it's very poetic, it's beautiful. And you realize that sometimes, you know, the non-monogamous people, they created this word called compersion.
Mm-hmm.
Compersion is the opposite of jealousy. You feel compersion when you're actually happy if your partner explores with someone else.
Mm.
And it sounds complicated, and it is, but I just feel that sometimes the Judeo-Christian mentality has created this shame and guilt around sexuality, which has really been contracting consciousness, not expanding it.
Yeah, and contracting our bodies also.
Everything, yeah.
And our way to express ourselves, and mostly also as women.
Correct.
So, yeah, very interesting in using also sexuality and tantra to also expand awareness.
Correct.
And also expand relationships in a couple. However, a couple wants to experience it. And you have been also expanding awareness around change also since I remember this documentary of 2012 about the change of the Mayan calendar.
Yes.
And we are in changing times. What would you like to comment on that?
That's an interesting story, because when we started to interview Mayan scholar about the end of the Mayan calendar, it was a 6,400 years old calendar that happened to end on 21st of December 2012. And also in the Indian astrology, in the Yugas, the Kala Yuga, there's also a system of calendar from the Indian astrology where this cycle of Yuga also ended in around 2012. And then, if you think about it, even the age of Aquarius in the Western astrology point at this moment in time, right? So that's three major school of thoughts. You know, a lot of intelligent people spend a lot of time studying these things. It's not just like... And then the prophecies, there is the Hopi, the Native American, and the Kogi in Colombia also, they had the prophecies about this moment in time. So what is it? I mean, is it a coincidence that this, like, you know, the Maya, the Indian, the Western astrology, the Hopi, the Kogi, they all point at this moment in time. And back then, I thought, I didn't really believe in my heart that something would happen, like a transformative thing or a big epidemic or a war or a cataclysm or a shift in consciousness. I didn't really believe it in my heart. I thought it was a good meme. I thought it was a good excuse to talk about meditation, ayahuasca, urban design, permaculture, meditation. We interviewed David Lynch. But now, 8 years later, you see what's happening in the world and you think, uh-oh, maybe there was something to it, you know? Maybe there was something to it. Maybe there is a pattern and some people, some civilization can access those patterns and you know, maybe there is some sort of a cycle. You know, Dr. King, Martin Luther King used to say that the moral arc of the universe is very slow, is very big, but it exists. So if there is a moral arc of the universe, if there is a tendency of an expansion of consciousness, then maybe those, you know, scientists for the time were able to connect with some sort of memory bank, you know, like the Theosophists and Madame Blavatsky, and also recent scientists like Rupert Sheldrake. They talk about morphogenetic field. They say that maybe there is all around some sort of memory bank, like the Akashic fields, and people with some capabilities can access those fields and they can see the pattern. So this is for me, you know, I have a goosebump. This is for me, you know, it's something that is worthwhile to believe. And I don't think you need evidence. I mean, if you're a very rational, scientific mind, you might want evidence, and that's not going to happen. But you don't even have evidence that there is no pattern. So if you have to do a leap of faith between, you know, everything is random, you know, the Newtonian Cartesian idea that the universe is just a gigantic clock, that those is just mechanical, that all these planets and all the Earth rotate and this whole thing rotate, this reductionist view, we don't know if it's true. But what we do know is that it has informed our reductionist science, which for some things is doing great, but from other things, so, right? Like the science applied to food and agriculture or to health. It's you know, what's happening with the industrial monoculture is this idea that, you know, we can, with pesticides and chemicals, we can find a linear solution to a complex problem. Nature is complex, it's not linear. So if you take, you know, thousands of hectares of one crop, then that's not, you take the complexity out, and then you have to then intervene with external agent like pesticide and fertilizer, and then you have a completely depleted product. And the depleted, so with no nutrients and no microorganism. And then when you eat a depleted product, then it doesn't feed your microbiota. So like I was telling you, there is this new machine to study the brain. Now there is new machine to study the gut also. There are more and more powerful electronic microscope. So now we know, we're starting to discover that the microbiota might not be the second brain, might actually be the first brain. It might be, there might be more activity, more complexity. Apparently there is, it's even difficult to imagine, there's 10 with 32 zero, like quadrillion of quadrillion of quadrillion of bacteria, microorganisms in your microbiota.
And what brought you to go deeper into regenerative farming? Was it from a personal project that maybe you started building the house? Was more from a global perspective that something needed to change in our basics, in our soil, in our earth, in the way we are cultivating the earth?
Yes. So on this topic, I asked a writer friend of mine called Rory Spower, who also live in the islands, to write an essay about the link between psychedelic awakening and ecological awakening. And so that also you will find it on the blog of the Mango TV. In a few words, there is this writer, E.A. Wilson, who invented this term called biophilia, which is this sense of being connected with nature and be part of nature. And so one thing that happens with the psychedelic experience and the reducing of your egoic structure, you have a sense of connection. You feel connected to nature. You feel part of the original creation. You know, all this thing that you hear about, you know, tree hugging and living in nature, the old hippie culture of really being connected with nature and being connected with the cycle of nature. Yeah. And also, you know, link your nutrition to the cycle of nature. We were so used in the city to have strawberry and tomato all year round, mm-hmm. that then you lose a little bit the sense of the cycle of the season. So I would say that definitely my sense of, you know, biophilia was developed by my year of exploration with psychedelic medicine. And then the first step was to be more careful about your diet, especially in America. You know, America is now going through an epidemic of all kind of things, of diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and that's pretty much linked to bad nutrition. Mm-hmm. The fact that some Americans don't eat any food at all. Mm-hmm. They only eat synthetic and sugar and also some of the vegetable and fruit that grows in this monoculture farm, they have very little left of natural product. Mm-hmm. Because they don't taste anything, there's no nutrients, there's no microorganisms. So when we decided to move to Ibiza and we have the land, it was obvious to start a garden. And then from there, we met a permaculture expert called José Anoyaga from the Pays Basque, like you, who is really radical permaculturist. And he persuaded us very fast to start what he calls Bosco Biologico, which is a food forest, which is a principle of agroforestry that basically doesn't need fertilizer and pesticide. It basically uses each other's, the plants and the fruits and the herbs, they use each other as they communicate and they exchange nutrients. For example, José knows which plant you need to put next to the tomato to avoid the ants. It's a certain plant that has a certain amount of nitrogen absorption that keeps the ant away. Mm-hmm. Then with mycelium, with mushroom that you put into the ground, you facilitate these different plants, herbs, and trees to communicate and exchange nutrients through the network of the mycelium. Mm-hmm. Paul Stamet is a big expert on this, on mycelium. We interview him for 2012 Time for Change. And also this idea of, like, you know, regenerate the soil and prepare the soil for many years. People don't know that, but, you know, when we bought the land here, I told José, listen, you know, let me build a house and we're going to do the garden. He said, no. First you do the garden and then you do the house, because it might take 3, 4, 5 years to prepare the soil, to take the big stone out of the ground, to put the right compost and then the right flowers that then dies. And so when we start planting, it was already very fertile soil that they prepared for years and years. So that's why I think it's very important. And also, you know, this kind of permaculture project, they absorb a lot of CO2. Like 1 hectare of pine forest, maybe absorb 1 or 2 tons of CO2. 1 hectare of permaculture, if it's done properly, can absorb up to 15 tons. Wow. Now, to give you an idea, it's not a lot of 15 tons, but it's like 30 flights from London to New York. Mm-hmm. So if you are someone that counts this footprint and want to be carbon neutral, which is more and more people will have to do, sure. This idea of, like, you know, plant a permaculture garden, it's already the fastest way to start offsetting your carbon footprint. And as a side effect, you have nutritious food. Mm-hmm. So it's like a double whammy.
Yeah, so I would be so interested about knowing more about your project of Ibiza land regeneration.
Yes, yes. So the idea, you know, Ibiza, it's an interesting situation because there is the good and bad. So the bad is that because this island is so popular among tourists, a lot of agricultural land has been abandoned. Mm-hmm. From, I think, 2014 to 2018, I think 20,000 acres has been abandoned. Mm-hmm. Because basically the son of the Payés, they don't want to be farmer anymore. They want to work in turismo, they want to work in clubs and bar or taxi. And also the owner of the fincas, they really make their money through the casita, you know, through the house. Mm-hmm. They rent the house to the tourist, and the guard and the land, they don't farm it. What they do, sometimes they till it. So they go with a tractor with these very deep blades. It's like, you know, 30, 40 centimeters blade, and then go deep. So when you go around Ibiza and you see this red soil and you say, oh, so sweet, Ibiza red soil, but that's actually very bad for the environment, because those deep blades, that's so invasive that they destroy the house for the microorganism. So what you have to do with the land, really, you have to leave it alone. You have to, you know, put the manure and the compost, but you don't have to turn it every season like they do it here. Mm-hmm. You know, there are five principles of permaculture, which is radical biodiversity, so rotating crop, having all kind of plant and trees and herbs all mixed up. Mm-hmm. Cover the crops from the sun with the hay. Incorporate animals. You know, now we know that the best fertilizer is the food that goes through the animal's stomach. Mm. And then having alive roots all year round, you know, to have the roots, alive plants all year round. Because when you till it, then the nice flowers come in the spring like now, but then in the winter nothing happens. Mm. And then the fifth one is like, I think, to incorporate insect and bees. And so basically so that's the bad news about Ibiza. But the good news is that because farmers did not need to use the land because the proceeds was coming from the house, they never invite the monoculture, the chemical industry. Mm-hmm. So the land here is protected. It's been abandoned, but it's not toxic. Mm-hmm. So now we have the opportunity in this island that is full of resourceful people to turn this 20, 30, 40,000 acre into regenerative agriculture. And that would not only bring incredible local food, you know that in Ibiza we only farm 1% of the food we eat. 99% of the food consumed in this island comes from abroad, which is crazy when you think you have all this land available. So Ibiza Land Regeneration is trying to find underused land from possibly campesinos, from Payes, that then can talk to their friends. You know, there's so many land that mostly is owned by Payes. And so we offer, there's a beautiful regulation in the Balearic that protect young, new agriculture. And says that encourage landowner to rent their land for 95 euro per year per hectare. Mm. And so this super good price would hopefully allow a new generation of agriculture, of farmers, to farm all kinds of things. Mm. Ibiza Land Regeneration has chosen to start to use a system of regeneration called PRV, okay, which is Pastoral Rational Voisin. Now, Mr. Voisin was an agronomo, and he basically designed this system where for every hectare, you divide it in 20 different lots, and then you have two types of animal, chicken and sheep. And what they do, first you put the chicken on lot one, then at the end of the day, they move in lot two, and the sheep goes in lot one. And then they move in parallel, two, three, three, four, four, five. And so by the time that they finish the tour after 20 days and they come on lot one, what has happened? That the animals had eaten and had their manure that fertilized the grass. So it's this like virtuous cycle of new, more nutrients food for the animals that then create this incredible rich soil. One spoon of topsoil has like, you know, trillion and trillion of microorganisms, more than all the stars in the universe. Mm. You know, Zach Bush is a doctor that talks about regenerative agriculture. He's one of the spokesmen of the movement. So now we are like partnering with other farmers that want to do other form of cultivo. Like, for example, this lady wants to do aronia, which is a type of apple berry. Super nutrient, like superfood, like pomegranate. So we're now discussing on letting us regenerate with the animals, rotating for maybe a year, and then she can use this freshly fertile land for her Aronia. You know, so this kind of conversation, it's amazing. And there is a beautiful group in Ibiza that started from this idea of wanting to regenerate Ibiza land called Ibiza Regeneration. It's a WhatsApp group with a hundred of people, an expert. And yeah, if any of your listener want to join it, we can invite them in that group. Yeah, and that for me, it's just the last thing I want to say, because I really think that, you know, last year there was 40 degrees Celsius in San Antonio. Okay. And this island, as you know, has the problem with water. Mm-hmm. And so this extreme temperature also comes from a lack of water. Mm-hmm. If you regenerate, you know, 20, 30,000 acres, you can change the ecosystem of the island. You can create more water, you can create a more temperate environment. And the last thing I want to say, because I'm really passionate about that, you know, Ibiza is not flat like the Bahamas or something. You have all these mountains. Mm-hmm. So the Australians have invented this system called key line design, mm-hmm. where basically you can capture rainwater through the mountains. Mm-hmm. Because if you just dig a huge space in the ground, it rains. You know, in January, it rained 4 or 5 days. But if you just expect to catch the rain just with a big hole, it might take a lot of days of rain. Mm-hmm. But if you're next to the mountains and you can dig some kind of path for the water to be channeled, mm-hmm. a friend of mine who's doing great work in the island in terms of agriculture, Alonso, he's done this huge reservoir and then he carved 6-7 paths in the mountain. And now with 3-4 days of rain, he collects 1 million liters of water. Because it all goes from the channel. So you use like 2-3 square kilometers of mountain, or maybe less, to channel all this water in this reservoir. And so if just like, few, I don't even say all of them, but just maybe 20% of landowners that have mountains nearby, if they start collecting water, rainwater, that way we will solve the problem of water of Ibiza. So, yeah.
And I saw that you already, like, did a few projects. You planted, how many trees you planted?
So that's another friend who does the almond tree, Christian, who does, he wanted to restore the Santa Agnes de Corona. He wanted to revive the old Santa Agnes, where a lot of almond trees were, like, abandoned and dead. My personal Bosco Biologico food forest, we have... olive tree and fig tree and peach and all kind of an avocado, and we are trying with papaya and really our Joséan every month wants to try something different. You know, it's really a trial and error agriculture. Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me a little bit of my time in investment banking, where, you know, like a robust portfolio of investment is a portfolio that is well diversified. So that in every macroeconomic scenario, if gold goes up and interest rate goes down and equity goes there and emerging market, the idea is to be well diversified. And I think like a robust agricultural land is also designed for extreme weather, for the rain, for too much, too hot, too cold. So it's a constant trial and error. But it's very rewarding to eat things from your garden. Not only they taste much better, but it's so much fun.
And that also they have so many minerals, and also that they enrich so much your microbiome. Because exactly. As you widen also the species in your garden, yeah. Then these species enrich your cells, yes. Enrich the DNA of your yes. cells, because the food is one of the things that talk to our DNA.
Yes. Yes.
And also the microbiome in our intestines, yes. That yes. You named before, how important it is. And also the connection there is between the guts and the brain also.
Yes. Yeah, the serotonin creation, etc. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the most important maybe topics at the moment.
Yes, the loss of biodiversity is more important than climate change.
I also wanted to ask you, what is the meaning of holistic land management? Because I saw in the project of Ibiza Land Regeneration that one of the characteristics of the project is that you offer holistic land management.
Yes.
What is that?
So holistic meaning, you know, considering the whole. So when you have, for example, we're looking at the land of Ibisenko, he has got 20 hectares. So the idea is, you know, rather than adding one crop after the other, is to design it holistically, mm-hmm. which means, okay, let's have a certain, you start with the variable that you're given, you know, this, how much water there is, how is it exposed to the sun and to the wind, and then you have like an holistic plan where all these different crops you want to cultivate, they all make sense in their proximity, in their exposure. They sort of like work as a team. Mm-hmm. Whereas even the law, they are designed that, you know, when you ask your farming license, you have to pick a crop. Say, okay, I want to do wine for grapes for wine. And then the inspector comes and you have to have one crop. Whenever you ask for license for something, you know, organic and more integrated, there's always more paperwork, mm-hmm. which doesn't make any sense, right? Because the integrated permaculture biodiverse farming will not only guarantee the health of the soil, but also the health of the human beings. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the monoculture, you will end up using pesticide, mm-hmm. which are toxic. You know, I don't want to sound too alarmistic, but there's been various studies now in America, and they prove that the glyphosate that come from Roundup in the pesticide, it really create all kind of chronic diseases.
It's certainly proven also that it affects our barrier systems in our gut. It's a very important topic. And how has been for you during all these years to approach topics that were maybe a little bit forehead? How do you say that? Like when it's like a little bit before mainstream media would start like caring about it. For example, like, you started to address different ways of approaching sex or relationships or all this change of 2012, like much more before, maybe even 10 years before the mainstream media start looking at it. We know you are talking about regenerative agriculture, and it will be more a mainstream topic in 10 years. We don't know, hopefully not. But how has your journey been with that, connected to that? And also, like in your surroundings, how has your family reacted to it, your friends?
Yes, that's a good question. It you know, it wasn't easy, you know, because mostly because of the lack of not just social recognition, but also financial return. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these movies, they were like far too early for their time, far too esoteric. And so, you know, I've been lucky enough that my wife has been studying as a psychotherapist, and, you know, she created the space for really try to address, you know, your true desire, try to go behind the cultural conditioning of you know, keeping with the Joneses, they say in America, where you compare yourself to other, and it's very hard to give your heart and soul to topic that are not recognized, or that you can't make money from because you feel a little bit marginated, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, in New York we found a beautiful community of you know, we call them evolvers or regenerators, which you know, are not particularly successful financially, but you know, they, which is pretty much the Burning Man vibe, you know, or some of these like retreat in the Amazon or upstate New York. So basically, we joined a community of transformational beings, or a community of you know, change maker, which we felt comfortable with. But definitely it was definitely difficult to, you know, to move from London for, you know, an investment banking world connected with mainstream society into a more like, you know, esoteric production company, but it has been amazing, and you know, I would do exactly the same all over again.
Yeah, sounds like it has been a journey of connecting also more to your truth, and exactly. Through that, you yes. have been able also to join other people that were also looking for that yes. truth and honesty. Yes. And is that one of the reasons that brought you also to be part of the community here in Ibiza?
Yeah, the authenticity and yeah, the authenticity, I think this vulnerability, there is one author I like. Her name is Renée Brown. Yes, she says that it's only by embracing your vulnerability that you can grow. You say, you know, if you're afraid to, you know, to feel and look vulnerable, then you're not taking risk. Then without taking risk, you can really get to result. And I always felt that, the Ibiza community were particularly free and open-minded and willing to take risk of being different. and so I felt myself immediately at home here. and yes, my wife wanted to move here for a long time. I was a little bit resistant. And then the pandemic decided the timing for us. We arrived here in last April, and then we never left, really. I mean, I have to go to London. I'm half the time here, half the time in London. But it's been good to be back in Europe also.
Yeah, it looks like Ibiza is providing a safe space for us, like regarding our bodies, yeah. Because we are in this beautiful nature we have around. And also it's like a safe playground for us to open, to be vulnerable, to explore ourselves. Yes. And also to be more authentic to our true being.
Yeah. The self-exploration has been a big topic, a big, you know, it takes a long time, you know, the inner journey and to going to really rewire your brain. Yeah. Because in those years as a kid, you really have an imprinting. Yeah. And I can remember one of these psychedelic scientists once told me this anecdote, which I think is quite fitting, is that, you know, if you think the cross-country skiing, when your little ski are stuck in this deep track, mm-hmm. So the ski are stuck there and you go around the woods. But then if you want to, like, start rewiring your brain, you know, in a specific aspect of your personality, which is dealing with your insecurity or self-esteem, or then you have to, like, get out of those tracks and stay out of them long enough to dig the new one. Yeah. And it's difficult at the beginning, especially because you have this, you know, old way to be, this old neurocircuitry that are very ingrained. So you are stuck there, you try to get out, but then the deepness of the tracks pull you back. You have to stay out long enough to dig it in the new tracks, which is the new neurocircuitry. Mm-hmm. And you know, people sometimes underestimate the work, you know, and for example, I spoke a lot about psychedelic, but you know, that's give you sense, give you a glimpse of a brain programmed in a different way, but it doesn't change it for you. It just gives you the aware that it's possible. Then you have to do the work with meditation and just, you know, in mind training, in rewiring this brain. It takes a lot of time. So, because a lot of people now, I remember when I was doing the first ayahuasca ceremony in 05, that's like 16 years ago, you know, there were only people that really, you know, they did not have any other option. They almost like, they were like run out of option in terms of like, you know, finding some peace. But now you hear everybody, people that not necessarily, you know, there's not necessarily people that really has a calling because they need it. It's almost like a question of life or death. So this is just, I just wanted to say that because, you know, this practice is becoming so popular now, but it's not a silver bullet. It's part of your arsenal of tools. But then you really need to every day when you get caught in your mind of you know, the negative thinking or of the putting yourself down or the bad roommate in the head, then you have to we are aware and you don't give it importance. And you like you really try to rewire your brain to think in a certain way. It's like an athlete, you know, before the world records, they've been training so much. And the same thing is for the mind. You have to train your mind in being positive, in preparing for not just for the healing, but also for the self-actualization. You know, how do you find your purpose? And that's also is It's an important topic that maybe we talk another time about your purpose.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree that medicine, plants, psychedelics also can open, but then you need to rewire that. And there are certain practices like meditation, like, for example, Stephanie, your wife, does these beautiful meditations every day that takes commitment and also gives you reward after. And I find community is quite important. Have it been also like the community here in Ibiza, the people that you surround yourself with, be an important part of this rewiring? And also, Soran was like mentioning in the last episode that for him was very important that the men's circles also that you all host here on the island. Is that so? Could you talk a little bit more about the importance of community, about men supporting each other?
In this island, there's a very feminine energy. And, you know, Tanit, the goddess of the highland, was a female god, and the Scorpio energy. I don't know exactly, I don't know how to explain it very well, but I see a lot of very empowered women in this island, and there seems to be, you know, very self-sufficient and very empowered. And so Zoran created this Ibiza Brotherhood as a response to all this, like, powerful woman circle. And so yes, we have this WhatsApp group and we share information, and then sometimes it's like sport or adventure activity, or, you know, the last event we did, we participate was from this teacher train, Jodorowsky train, on both her work with the tarot card and her work with cleaning past your family lineage, starting with this idea that all the things, most of your character, you know, personality trait, come directly from your parents, either as a reaction, or are you copy them, or as a compensation, and that was so interesting, and it was nice to share that with the Ibiza Brotherhood. Then I have another group of brothers actually, and we do every year 1 week. Unfortunately, we haven't done we skipped last year, where we do 5-6 days together, and we use low dose ayahuasca just to facilitate communication. And then we have this practice of it's a Tibetan practice of where you hold one object. I can't remember now exactly the name of this practice, but basically we pick a subject, and then everybody hold this object and can talk for 10 minutes on the subject. Nobody can interrupt. It's not a conversation. Everybody has to share from the heart. And then you pass around this object. And that's, again, for me, the magic happens because it's a safe place where you can embrace your vulnerability. Mm. Because if it's only by embracing your vulnerability that you can take risk and grow. Mm. That's why Rene Brown, I think, is so good for that. Yeah, this is about the brotherhood.
Thank you so much, Giancarlo. You have taken us on a journey through all the elements of your life. We started with the wind of the financial banking, continued with the journey to the heart through plant medicines. Then the opening day cost was expressed itself through your creative fire on the films and documentaries you produced. And finally, it landed on the earth with the project of Ibiza Land Regeneration. Thanks again. And before we conclude this episode, I have 3 questions I ask all my guests. First question, what brings you in alignment with yourself?
You know, for me, it's definitely sport. You know, there's a tennis club here in San Antonio. I'm very close to all my sport. There is a horse stable where, you know, last year I stopped, actually 2 years ago, I started playing polo on the arena. So not on the grass. It's a smaller field, and that's really adrenalinic. And then swimming and running. And then the morning I have 3 days a week, I have yoga meditation, and the other days I try to do, you know, right now I'm following a Tony Robbins practice, which is a 25 minutes recording, and it's a combination of breathing, visualization, self-healing, and gratitude. And that I feel it's this idea of like rewiring your brain and feeling empowered. And so the gratitude is important, the visualization is important. And yeah, and then you know the healthy food. That's my journey now in really understanding food. And you know, I never knew how to cook really. I've been lucky all my life to have my mother and wife and helpers, but when I was stuck here for the lockdown I was in an apartment in Santa Gertrudes for like 12 days. There was no restaurant open, there was no delivery, there was just the supermarket. So I had to cook for myself. And then I had all this time, right? And so I started following this chef online, Italian chef. And so now between the agriculture, regenerative agriculture and the curiosity of healthy food, that's also part of my regeneration.
What enhances your creativity?
Same answer, right? I think the morning practice and the sport and feeling your body and be connected to your body and you know the what's his name Jamie Will and Stephen Kotler, they wrote this book about flow. It's that state that where the athlete excel, right? And so that state of flow comes where mind, body, and spirit are aligned. So meditation, the practice, the sport, and also the purpose. Also do what you really like, what you think is, you know, I remember in your podcast, Zoran said, you know, every day, don't think what should I do, but, you know, what would love do? Yeah. It sounds a bit corny, but it really helps.
Which are the ways you share yourself with the world?
One of my many passions is to curate discussion after a documentary. So that was what you read in my biography. I've been collaborating with this beautiful boutique hotel restaurant where they are every month. It's called Tuesday Caminos. I would do maybe every 3 weeks or once a month, I would pick a documentary on these regenerative themes, and then I would pick a couple of speakers to discuss it. And that's, for me, it's what I feel most on my element, and I would like to continue to do. And I think that's how I share myself, I think. I don't know.
Thank you so much, Giancarlo.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'd love to come back next year for more ideas.